for us to begin. We'll be taking your Bibles and opening to Hebrews chapter 12. Hebrews chapter 12 and verse 1 will be our jumping off place this morning. Hebrews 12 and verse 1. All right, for those that are visiting with us here this morning, we've been discussing this particular quarter, the devil, sin, and hell. We've discussed the devil early on, and now we are taking a closer look at sin. And in particular, last Wednesday and today, we're going to be looking at kinds of sin. We talked Wednesday about secret sins. Today we're going to talk about beginning. We're going to talk about besetting sins, and we'll just see. We'll see how far we can get. So I'm going to read for us, please, Hebrews chapter 12 and verse 1. All right. First of all, verse 1, what is this cloud of witnesses that the Hebrews writer is talking about? All right, those that are mentioned in chapter 11. Who all does this include? All right, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Moses, Enoch, and Noah. Okay, what are we seeing about these men in particular, and the women for that matter that are mentioned there in Hebrews chapter 11? All right, they had great faith. What are we talking about as far? Give me some examples of their faith. Okay. He was willing to sacrifice Isaac. As a matter of fact, in Abraham's mind, as far as he was concerned, as that knife was raised over his head, he had already done it. Okay. What else? Noah obeyed God. And think about the time in which, we're talking about sin, right? Think about the time in which Noah lived, right? And everything that was going on. What does Genesis chapter 6 tell us about the world at the time of Noah? His thoughts were evil continually, right? All the time. Only 8 righteous souls. Noah preached for 100, can you imagine? And that would be discouraging to me as a preacher. To preach for 120 years, and I've got 7 converts other than myself. That's gotta be discouraging. Yes, ma'am. You know, what strikes me though there in Genesis chapter 6 and that phrase that talks about the people of the world, the men of the world, and their thoughts were only evil continually. You know, in the original, that phrase, they were actually trying, they were thinking up new ways, trying to think up new ways in which to be evil is what that phrase is talking about there. And so this was the depth of the depravity that Noah was faced with. Okay. And his faith, allowed him to set aside the sin of his day and to continue, to do what God would have him to do. As a matter of fact, the Bible tells us that everything that God told him to do, what Noah do. So did he. Okay. So that's what Noah did. All right. What about, who else? We have Abraham. We got Noah as examples. All right. What kind of people were Israel when Moses brought them out of Egypt? I'm sorry? Yes, they were. Here God has just performed all these miracles, right? He's brought these plagues upon Egypt. He's parted the Red Sea. He's destroyed the Egyptian army. They've seen all this power and glory of God. And 40 days spent at the base of Sinai, what do? They built an idol. They went back, in their minds, they went back to Egypt. Okay, and so, Moses in his faith, was able to overcome the sin of his own people and to do what God would have him to do. What about, for instance, Rahab is mentioned in Hebrews chapter 11. What about Rahab? What kind of woman, before Israel got to Jericho, what kind of woman was Rahab? She was a harlot. Okay? That's a nice way, biblical way of saying prostitute. That's what she was. That was her profession. And yet she's mentioned in Hebrews chapter 11 as a woman or person of faith. You think of what she had to overcome. And to be, as a matter of fact, does not Matthew chapter 1 tell us that Rahab was in the bloodline of Christ? You think of everything, the sin that she had to overcome in order to do and to become the woman that she became. And so Hebrews chapter 12 and verse 1 gives us this, in light of Hebrews chapter 11, this hope that we can overcome sin. All right, notice what the Hebrews writer says here. After we're surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses. All right, we've got this, and it's interesting to me that the Hebrews writer, and this is another reason I believe the Hebrews written by Paul, is the way Paul uses these analogies. Okay? Chad, you did track and field. You were a thrower, right? All right, would you rather perform in a stadium that had about 5 people in it or one that had thousands of people? Huh? Lots of people. Okay, lots of people. Thousands of people. Alright, and that's the idea right here. Okay? The stadium, as far as our Christian race is concerned, is not empty, is it? We've got folks like Abraham, Noah, Moses, Rahab, Isaac, and Jacob, they're all watching. And he says, because of this great cloud of witnesses that are about us, let us lay aside every weight. All right? Now, what does the Hebrews writer mean by that? Lay aside every weight. And think of this in the manner of a runner about to run a race. Right, I'm not a runner, and I don't know if any of you are, but, have you ever seen maybe glimpses of folks maybe that are training for a marathon or maybe even, training for a sprint, a race, a faster paced race? What do they do in training? All right. A lot of times they'll wear weights on their wrists and on their ankles. Okay, and that helps build certain muscles in order to help them move a little bit faster. Okay, and so that's one thing that we may be looking at, and so lay aside those weights. What else? As spiritually as what we're talking about here, yes, ma'am, that can be part of it, and that's what we're getting at when we're talking about besetting sins, as we're getting to in this verse here in a moment. Alright, when you watch the Olympics, alright, and a lot of times with runners, in particular in the Olympics, modesty kind of goes out the window, but what do you notice about them? Talking about modesty. I'm sorry? Alright, well they maintain their bodies, but they're not wearing much, are they? They're not wearing much. Why is that? Okay, aerodynamics. They want to get rid of every weight, right? Okay. You know how they used to do the Olympics? Like during the time that Paul's talking about now? Naked. They didn't wear a thing. Okay. And when he's talking about lay aside every weight right here, literally what Paul's talking about was even the inner garments. Okay. Even the inner garments. They took everything off. Okay. So what is Paul's point here? What's the Hebrews writer's point? About what's he trying to get across concerning sin and the Christian? Because sin is the weight that he's talking about. Temptation is the weight that he's talking about. So what's he talking? What? Get rid of every trace, okay? Every trace of it. We can be free from sin, all right? Unencumbered, unhindered, all right? And he says to lay it aside, get rid of it. And then he alludes to what he's talking about, and the sin which does so easily beset us, or ensnare us, as the New King James says. Okay? All right, what does it mean to be beset or to be ensnared? Held back? Trapped? Okay? I'm sorry? Like the siege of a city. Okay. That's a good, I think that's a good way to put it. Alright. And snare, you know, what does a snare do? Alright, it traps it. Alright. You know what a snare is, right? You set this snare and something comes along the trail and it gets in the snare. It impedes its journey, doesn't it? It doesn't allow it to continue any further. That's what a snare does. Okay. And so this is the idea here. Going back to our racers, our runners, okay, they would lay aside every weight. They would even take off their inner garments. They would run these races naked because they didn't want any of their garments, even the inner garments, to impede their progress in any way. And so they, Paul, as he points out here, they'd set these all these things aside. And then he says, when we have done that, what are we to do with this race? Run with endurance. Run with patience. All right, and that's what we're talking about here. Run with patience. Run with endurance. It's, you know, same word translated both ways there. All right. So, what does it mean to run with patience or to run with endurance? Okay. What do you suppose would happen if we took somebody like Usain Bolt, the world's fastest man, and we put him in the Boston Marathon? Where do you think he'd finish? Probably not toward the front. Why? He's a sprinter. Okay? He doesn't have to work on endurance, does he? He just has to worry about being the first to cross the finish line at 100 meters, not 26.2 miles. Okay? And so you put somebody like that that is a sprinter, that's all he's ever worked on. He hasn't worked on building his endurance and doing anything like that. Then you put them in something like a long race like that, it's not going to be good for them, is it? Alright, but on the other hand, when we're talking about this here, so this tells us what about the Christian race? Is it a sprint? Or is it more like a marathon? It's a marathon, isn't it? It's going to be a long, an arduous race. Yes, sir. Skillfully surround. Sin can do that, can it? Sin can, as Dennis was pointing out, that ensnare or beset there literally means to skillfully surround. Okay, so, and it does take skill to set a snare that animals will actually go into, doesn't it? And so that's a good point for us to think about. You've got someone, Satan, that is highly skilled in what he does and setting these traps for us. And so we have to be careful of these snares. Let us run with patience. The race, notice that the race that is set before us. What are we talking about? That last phrase there that is set before us. Okay. If we endure to the end, we have a victory promised unto us. Alright, so, alright. Your life is this course. Now, are we going to have obstacles? We're going to have obstacles along the way. But the course that is set before us, where do we find the boundaries of this course? In the Bible. Alright, and so, let us for a few minutes, with having studied in depth verse 1, let's go back to the word or the phrase besetting or ensnaring sins. All right. What is a besetting sin? Something that can disqualify you? Just in general, what is a besetting sin? All right. To discourage you to the point that we want to quit. That could become sin. Easily, and again, remember what we're talking about here when we talk about something that is skillfully, that's used skillfully surround. And again, keep in mind, as the Hebrew writer is talking here about a race, about these runners removing all of these garments so they would not be impeded. And so here he pleads for Christians to lay aside every hindrance in living the Christian life, especially those sins which, like inner garments, cling so closely to us. Okay, so those the besetting sins are sins which hinderingly cling so close to us and are so easily committed. Right, what's all right, set before us. Same phrase, right? All right, so God has given us this promise, the hope set before us. All right, you run a race. There is a prize expected for the winner, right? That is set before them. All right? For instance, the Olympics. What is your hope in the Olympics? What's the prize? The medals, right? Gold, silver, or bronze. That's what's set. Of course, the ultimate goal is what? Gold. Okay, and so that's what's set before you. Thanks for the cross reference there as well. All right? Now, someone may ask, what is the particular besetting sin of the text? Now, again, keeping, as we want to study, we want to keep things in their context, we have to take into account Hebrews chapter 11. So we put Hebrews 11 in conjunction with Hebrews 12 and verse 1. It seems to be, Hebrews 11 is we call what? Chapter of faith, or the hall of faith, right? Okay, and then we have this. So it seems that the particular besetting sin here, as and the entire context of Hebrews is about this, is the sin of unbelief. All right, so what are we getting at here when we talk about the sin of unbelief when it comes to God? And those things can definitely be besetting sin for those folks. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Right. Yes, sir, it is. What we're talking about here is the sin of unbelief. Are there examples of the sin of unbelief within the scripture? All right, King Saul. Right. All right, refusing to do what God has told you to do is a sin of unbelief. All right. Who else? Again, someone we just mentioned in the chapter of faith that also committed the sin of unbelief. Moses. All right, God told him to do what with the rock? Speak to it. What did he do? He struck it. How many times? Twice. All right. Therein is the great part of the sin, is that he struck it not just once, but he struck it twice. Okay? Because that rock is a picture of who? Rock is a picture of Christ. And how many times was he struck? As far as, how many times did he die? Once. But Moses struck it twice. He broke the type in that particular instance. Okay? Not only did he not do just as God commanded, but he went way beyond what God said. Okay? Alright. But the sin of unbelief, isn't that what God told him and Aaron? That they would not enter the promised land because they did not believe him? Alright? So, they knew who God was. You can't tell me that they didn't believe in God. Okay, so what did God mean here by the sin of unbelief? Faith and what was the last part? Obedience. You know, when we read John 3 and verse 16, he that believeth shall be saved. And Mark 16, that particular part, he that believeth and is baptized shall be saved. And then you read John 3:16. That God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son, that whosoever believeth in him, shall not perish, but have everlasting life. Alright? And that again is where I love the King James. Right? That ETH signifies what? A continuing action. Right? It also indicates obedience. Okay, so what we're talking about here, when it comes to the Hebrews and keeping things in the context, this particular besetting sin, the sin of unbelief, is while they may have believed in God, while they may have believed that Christ was indeed the Son of God, they weren't doing the things that He commanded them to do. Hence the sin of unbelief. They had to continue in their faith and their obedience. Great point. Now, we talked about some biblical characters that had besetting sin. What do you suppose Peter's besetting sin was? Okay, we can look at it as his pride. Jesus told him that he would deny him three times before the cock crew twice, right? Is that the only instance where we see Peter denying the Lord? All right, Galatians chapter 2. There he is, and the eating with Gentiles, those from James come, Judaizing teachers, and what does Peter do? He gets up and he separates himself from them. Same type of deal. Okay, and so he wavered in mind in this particular instance. We talked about Moses. What about James and John? Another couple more apostles of Jesus. You suppose they had a besetting sin? Do what? All right. They, right? Miss Lowe, did you have something? Right. Okay. From the garden, they all fled. You don't see anybody, really, you know, sticking by his side at that point. Right. You remember when Jesus and the apostles came into the city of Samaria and they would not receive him? What did James and John want to do? All right. They wanted to call down fire and brimstone, destroy the city as Sodom and Gomorrah were destroyed, right? That's what they wanted to do. And Jesus nicknamed them sons of thunder. Okay, they were impatient to a fault at this particular point in their lives. And it's ironic to me that here you have John, who is also known as what? The apostle of what? The apostle of what? Love, wanting to call down fire on a city. It's ironic. But, you know, that was something he was impatient at this point. What about Simon the sorcerer? He had a besetting sin, didn't he? Wasn't a Christian very long, but he wanted to go back into his old vices. I'm sorry? Greed? Okay, so this was, you know, we have certain besetting sins, these things that are hard for us in particular to overcome. And what may be besetting for you may not be besetting for me. And so these are things we have to think about. Let's think about some areas for a moment. What are some areas from which arise besetting sins? All right, one thing that besetting sins may arise from, we may be drawn to certain things due to our temperament. Okay, just how we are. Think about folks that are prideful or lazy, skeptical, or just plain stubborn. All right, these are areas that besetting sins may arise from. All right, how does God address the lazy? What does Solomon write about the sluggard and the ant, or this? What's the comparison there? I already tell Solomon, go to the ant. Watch. Have you ever sat and watched an anthill for a little bit? Do you ever see them idle? Yeah, but you don't want to stand in it though, do you? All right. So you sit there and you watch these ants, and you never see an idle one, do you? If you ever see one sitting still, he's probably dead. Okay? They're always working. All right? And so we have to beware of these things. And if we have a certain temperament, then some things may be harder for us. Okay? If I am if someone is myself or anyone else for that matter, if they're just naturally lazy, then what do we do? How do we help that person? Give them a job, right? Put them to work. Well, that's the idea. What about someone that is naturally boastful or prideful? What do we do? What if I am that person? How do I overcome my pride or my boastfulness? Okay, if I'm talking to someone like that, you got to handle them gently because you know you're dealing with an ego. I'm sorry? Pride precedes a fall. How did Jesus deal with Peter? We talked about Peter being prideful, right? And he was to a certain degree. How did Jesus deal with him? Alright. Exactly. Alright. Sometimes we have to handle them with kids' gloves, but at other times, what do we need to do? Punch them in the mouth. Set them up for the fall. Okay? You have to determine that situation, right? But understand that if I'm naturally bent that way, I've got something to work on, don't I? I've got something that I have a need to overcome in that area. Alright? Something that can be besetting for some is maybe something that they were involved in before becoming a Christian. Alright? Think about some of the, what about the gambling addict and they become a Christian? You know, that's something that's always going to be, you know, at the back of their mind. What if they happen to live in a town like Las Vegas? It's going to be tough, isn't it? Well, that's true. I'm just saying, you know, you have a gambling addict, he obeys the gospel. Say he lives in Las Vegas. Okay? That's something that's always going to, I mean, you got a casino on every corner. That's something that's going to be a besetting sin. That's going to be something that he's got to overcome. Okay, and so that's, you know, a habitual liar. They learn the gospel, you know, they've got to overcome that. And so this, you know, these are, when we talk about besetting sins, these things that cling close to us, these are things that we've got to overcome. Besetting sins may be those to which we are exposed by our profession. All right. Think about, you know, certain professions. Who would have the, talking about lying, who would have the more temptation to lie about something, a dishwasher or a salesman? Salesman. Okay. He's going to have more temptation in that area than someone that's in the back washing dishes. Okay. And so that may be something that's besetting in that particular area. Besetting sins may be those to which we are particularly vulnerable due to a particular weakness. Okay? The person that is addicted to nicotine. Alright, and he's quit. Alright, that's something that if they're around someone that smokes or around someone that dips or chews tobacco, that's something that's gonna be tough on them. Okay, so they have to understand their weaknesses, all right? The alcoholic. It's going to be hard. He's got to fight to keep from becoming a drinker again. All right, besetting sins may be those to which we are particularly attached due to the influence of our rearing. Okay, our parents can have a long-lasting influence on us long after we're out of the house, can't they? And so if we're reared in a certain way or we see our parents behave in a certain way, we have to be careful in some instances not to act like that, not to fall into the same things that they fell into. And I'll give you the example again. My dad was a smoker. A long time, me growing up, I was 7 years old. And I knew where he kept his cigarettes. I got in his truck and being seven, young and dumb, I opened a brand new pack. He was going to find out. I've seen him light up 1,000 times. I lit up one of those cigarettes. I took one puff, and I hate cigarettes to this day because of what happened to me when I was 7. I don't think I've ever thrown up as much as I threw up that day. Okay? You know what my dad did though? Quit cold turkey after that day. He didn't want those things around his children anymore. You know, and so this is, you know, these are things that we have to think about. You know, you have, if he had continued to smoke and I got to be a teenager, and he's telling me my entire life, don't you smoke, don't you use tobacco, don't you do anything, but I continue to see him light up day after day after day, what do you suppose is going to happen when I'm able to buy cigarettes by myself legally? I'm probably going to go buy me a pack of cigarettes, ain't I? Right, because he has told me, he's saying, do as I say, not as I do. And that doesn't work. And so we have to understand that besetting sins may be those that we're attached to them because of the influence of our rearing. Oh yeah, that's a commercial, isn't it? Don't tell mom. Yeah, I remember that commercial. They're doing all these different things that he gives them this huge bowl of ice cream. And as he sets it before him, he says, don't tell mom. They go and do something and the dad has an accident and he looks at the kids and says, don't tell mom. And at the very end of it, she takes the kids hang gliding and as they land, it's a car commercial. She says, don't tell dad. Okay. What is that teaching? All right. And that's a commercial. And so that, you know, those are things for us. That's, I appreciate that here. That's something for us to consider. All right. Some things for us to consider personally. All right. And this is for our self-examination. What is your besetting sin? What is my besetting sin? And what is, you know, what is it that I'm so easily drawn to that I easily maybe fall back into? Is it a habit? Okay. Is it something that has just developed over time that I've got to overcome? Is it an attitude? Maybe I jump to conclusions, I judge when, I shouldn't, or I judge too harshly. Maybe I'm, too tolerant of certain things and not tolerant enough of others. You know, what are these things, you know, is it an attitude? Is it, you know, some sin of the tongue? Do I have a problem maybe with cursing, or is it, could it be, that I find myself, gossiping or, involving, myself when others are telling, off-color jokes? You know, is that something that I have a problem with? Is it some misplaced affection? Do I place more importance than I ought to on money, or maybe more importance than I ought to on family? Or the idea of having the preeminence? Is it some sin of the flesh? Immorality, fornication, adultery, homosexuality? Is it something along those lines? Gluttony, drunkenness? Or is it some other sin? Procrastination? Laziness? Losing your temper? Stealing? Worry? You know, are these things, you know, what is my besetting sin? And that's something that each one of us has to determine. And then what do we do once we determine that? Go to work. I agree. Besetting sins as well can be aggravated. All right. Let's say that we've gotten out of something, and we've been away from what? Maybe, we're talking about someone that has been an alcoholic. Okay. And they've gotten away from it. They've been sober for a while now. What do you suppose may happen if he goes back to hanging out with the same friends he used to drink with? Is that going to be good for him? Probably not. Okay. And so, if he goes back to hanging out with the same guys, a lot of times, what are you going to do? You're going to find yourself falling back into the same habits. And so you have to, there's sometimes you have to withdraw yourself from certain situations, certain people. Stay out of certain places. You heard about the guy that was on a diet and, it killed him, but that he had to drive by his favorite donut shop on the way to work. Okay. And he's driving by, and this particular day, he's been doing good with his diet, but this particular day, he's got to drive by this donut shop, and he said, and he tells himself, if there's a parking space, I'm going to stop, I'm going to get one donut. And he drives by, and there's not a parking space. The second time he drives by, there's not a parking space. Finally, on the seventh time by the donut shop, he finds a parking space, he goes in and gets himself a donut. All right? If he wants to stick to his diet, what should he do? Change his route, right? Don't drive by that donut shop. But if he puts himself in that, continually driving by there, and that temptation is there before him, eventually what's going to happen if he keeps putting that temptation at his feet? He's going to get trapped, isn't he? Okay? And so, and that's something else. You know, we may know that a trap is there, so to speak. You may have set it. Have you ever heard of someone, a trapper, that has set traps and ends up stepping in one of his own traps? I have. You think about that for a minute. How does he end up stepping in one of his own traps? He forgets that it's there, or he's careless, right? And so these are things that you gotta think, all right. And again, just like secret sins, besetting sins can be overcome. You look at 1 Corinthians. 1 Corinthians chapter 6 in particular. Paul lists all of these sins and he says, of them all, the unrighteous shall not inherit the kingdom of God. These were things that the Corinthians were legitimately struggling with. And in particular, verse 9 there, every one of those, including the sin of idolatry there, every one of those are sexual sins that are taking place within Corinth. All right? These are besetting sins to the Corinthians, but what does he say at the end of verse 10? And such were some of you. What had they done with these sins? They'd overcome them. They had been washed of them. And so they were able to overcome these things that were hard for them to overcome. All right, Paul was able to overcome the things of his past. 1 Corinthians 9 and verse 27. And to be an apostle of Jesus Christ. And so these besetting sins, we have to determine what our besetting sin is, and we need to get to work to be able to overcome them. Anybody have any questions, comments? Because we are out of... Yes, sir. In Hebrews 12? Yes, sir. Right. This is saying Hebrews chapter, we started out in Hebrews 12 and verse 1. If you read 2 through 11, it tells us how we overcome these besetting sins. We're able to do it because of Christ, the example that he set before us, and of course the blood, that was shed for us. Anyone else? Okay, what are we talking about there? True repentance. Okay? Good point. Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. What did Paul say about his body? He buffeted it daily. Okay? Now what does buffet there mean? To beat it daily. So what does he mean by that? Determine, train, discipline is what he means by that. And so he and that goes to your mind, right? You have to have the right mindset, the right self-discipline to overcome these things. Right. He worked on it. He wasn't lazy about it. And so this was something that he actively did. Okay. And so absolutely it goes back to the mind. All of that does. All right.